Blog Talk Radio.
Live from Indianapolis, Indiana, welcome to the Crossroads Sports Radio Show, presented by Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Crossroads Sports Radio, episode number 115. I'm your host, Brandon Reif, joined as always by Jonathan Birdsong, JB, with us. He'll be calling in here in a moment, but hope everybody's doing okay during this continued quarantine phase. We're starting to have some restrictions lifted here in Indianapolis, but we are here live on a Wednesday evening. Jonathan Birdsong, JB, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing all right, man. Doing all right, man. Ready to talk. I know I'm coming into a conversation, man. But yeah, just got off live, man. Got a lot of good responses. Like I said, I'm ready to get the show started.
Yeah, absolutely. We got a good show this evening. A lot of news. We got some optimistic minds out there as well for some of these sports. I've been kind of busy the last couple of days, but I was able to chime in to the last few minutes of your live show. I promise. People that like me, I promise I'll get one out there at some point. I just ain't had the time recently, so I was trying to hook up a few things tonight. But looking good, John. Let's dive right into it to start our show this evening. Arizona governor says pro sports, including the MLB, the NBA, the NFL, and the NHL, can resume this Saturday in Arizona if they want to compete, which I know we kind of talked about Major League Baseball. There was rumors of them possibly going to Arizona. The NBA, they're kind of looking like they may start up here soon. It was out today that the commissioner thinks he's going to have a decision made in the next 2 weeks as what to do for the season. The players are pulled. The NFL season looks like it's going to happen, but where it's going to happen is another thing. Colts, how we're going to have home games, we'll talk schedule, but will it actually be a home game or not? That'll be another thing. So, but John, your thoughts at first with the Arizona governor saying pro sports, and then the league possibly coming back to fruition.
Well, as much as you know, what I'm saying, the conditions have kind of put us in with a lot of gloom and doom, and we need to take it very seriously. People are still looking for some type of sliver of hope or some type of sliver of what it used to look like before we even knew what COVID-19 was. And you know what I'm saying, before we looked on the back of our wet wipes and knew, you know what I'm saying, what it kills or whatever, man, you know. But so it does give a little hope. Brandon, you know, I just don't wanna get folks, you know what I'm saying, heads too far in the clouds. Just think if we can have somewhat of a little pro sports, you know what I'm saying, reality kinda come back. Just make sure. I think it'll just be a, you know what I'm saying, a bridge. It'll be a very short season for everybody, as I think it should be.
Right. I think it's funny that they did the voting, and for the players for the NBA, the players want to play. Even Steph Curry, which I'm shocked, as terrible as a year they're having, he wants to come back and play. But then you hear Shaquille O'Neal and Charles Barkley saying, well, we just need to cancel the season. We need to do this. I'm sorry, Tonto. When's the last time Shaq and Barkley were players in the league? They just need to take a seat back. Let the players decide. Let the ownership. Let them decide what they want to do. We don't need to be. I don't want to be hearing from Barkley. I don't want to be hearing from Shaq and what the league needs to do. That's what happened. They gained all the traction with the March Madness tournament. It was Barkley and them saying, we can't do this. We can't do this. Jay Billis saying it. And then what happened?
Right. Like I said, I don't. You have to, like I said, but they're thinking like how it used to be. They're not thinking projectively. They're not thinking forwardly. So, like, these are special times, Brandon. I've kind of said it on these airways before. So, if you could have a season, why don't you? It has to be shortened. Including the postseason. So you, Brandon, don't fall out. You might have to do the best out of five. If you're in the NBA playoffs. There's nothing wrong with that. There ain't gonna be no shame in the ring. There ain't gonna be no shame in the ring or the championship that you know what I'm saying. If you lose, you know what I'm saying. It's not out of the realm of imagination. It's not out of the realm of imagination to go backwards how it used to be, like even before it was everything was a best of seven. You know what I mean? Or Brandon, would it even be bad if the NFL, I know they just came with, you know, the extra game for them, for everybody to play, but for everybody's safety, what's wrong with playing a non-scheduled game? I don't want to poo-poo, you know, say what we're going to talk about as far as the schedule going into, but if things, I'm just saying, if a current kind of changes and this thing doesn't kind of, you know, that we're in, isn't into our advantage. But like I said, mm-hmm. for Major League Baseball, if they can crank out anything resembling a season where maybe, like I said, everybody kind of plays each other once or twice or three times, and then you go into an automatic playoff season. I'm not going to look at it as a lesser. It'll be that season that, you know, it may be a chump team out of the blue. Sorry, I can't think of a better adjective, but maybe a chump team out of blue wins the championship, like unprecedentedly, you know what I mean? But nobody's going to think that's any lesser, man. People just want the escapism, really. That's what I think.
If I was to rank the four leagues on who I think comes back, or actually five leagues, even. I'll do five. Mm-hmm. I think number one, I think the NFL will be number one at coming back. I think they're going to get some things in place to be able to do this. NBA would be number two. I think the NBA could still, you know, I know they're working hard right now in the office trying to figure out where to go, how they're going to logistically make this work. So I'm excited for that. I think number three, the NHL has a shot to do this. The NHL, the problem is you have so many foreign players that it's going to be hard to get them to travel so much. And obviously with all the restrictions in their countries, I think the NHL is going to have some issues with that. Major League Baseball, yeah, they have a chance. They have a good chance. The problem I'm having, John, is what do you do with the 600, 700 some players or whatever you have that's in AAA, AA, single A? Are you going to let them play? If not, what if you have guys on your pro teams that get hurt or get the corona? If you don't let them play, then they're not practicing. They're not getting reps. You can't bring people up. Indianapolis Indians, right. Pittsburgh Pirates. If the Indians ain't playing, which I haven't heard a single thing about AAA, if they were going to play or not. All we're hearing is about Major League Baseball. So that's the concern I have with Major League Baseball. Then obviously the worst one I said was the NCAA. I do not think they're going to be doing fall football this year. I just don't. And then, you know, Mark Emmert came out and said the NCAA will not mandate a universal start date. They're going to leave it to the university and state officials. Well, we just saw California, no fall sports for the California state universities. So
yep.
Cal State, they have no fall sports. So, which is crazy, but, you know, they didn't say anything about basketball yet, but yeah, I just think it's going to be very hard. If you're leaving it to universities and states, John, you're not going to be able to get universally, you know, what if Alabama decides not to, okay? Just hypothetical. Alabama decides not to play, and you get maybe 20 teams that decide to play football this year. Are we really going to look at this as a college football season, you know? I mean, you only got 20 teams that can legally play or want to play, and, you know,
right.
I feel bad for the kids. But, it's all up in the air. It'll be interesting to see. But I am happy because we're starting to get some sports back, John. We've got the NASCAR starting up this weekend. We're going to have, like, in 10 days, we're going to have, like, six races, which is going to be great, that they're going to start doing. We've got the IndyCar that's going to be starting up here in June in Texas. We've got golf that's starting in June as well. And then we also got the Tiger-Peyton matchup that's going to be on Memorial Day weekend. That's the same weekend as NASCAR's Coke 600. So we got some stuff coming back slowly but surely as states start to open up. Now, you know, everybody's talking about loosening up the conditions and everything's starting to open back up. Well, I just saw a report today that there's more cases and more deaths and all this. So, you know,
right.
Who knows? Who knows what the heck's going to go on with that? But let's get off of the corona talk and the sport talk. Let's go to the NFL, John.
Yep.
The NFL schedule is out. It's released. Last Thursday night was released. It was kind of put out a little early by the teams, about 7:30 before it was actually released, 8 o'clock. I looked at my team's schedule, the Pittsburgh Steelers. I looked at the Indianapolis Colts' schedule. I looked at the primetime matchups, and I looked at, I like to call them homecoming games, when players play their old former teams. because I like some of those matchups as well. I kind of like the schedule. I like the way it breaks down. I went through John, and we'll break down the Steelers and Colts, some schedules and stuff like that. But I broke it down by, and I did my own predictions. I did put it out on Facebook what I did think the Colts were going to do, John. I had the Colts at 11-5. I had them 11-5 this year coming up, which, you know, with me, that's pretty modest with me. I don't really, you know, I usually give the Colts a bad one, like 8-8, 9-7, something like that. But I've got them 11-5. I think they can do very well this year with Phillip. I've got them winning their first four games. Jacksonville, Minnesota, the Jets, and Chicago. I had them losing at Cleveland. Then they beat Cincinnati and Detroit. And then they lose three in a row, Baltimore, Tennessee, and Green Bay. Then I've got them winning four more, Tennessee, Houston, Vegas, and Houston. I have them beating Jacksonville and losing to the Steelers. Folks, I already got chirped once. The reason why I have them losing to the Steelers is, one, the Steelers are a better team. I'm just going to flat out tell you that right now. Steelers are a better team than this Indianapolis Colts team. Number two, when's the last time the Indianapolis Colts won in Pittsburgh? When's the last time they won in Pittsburgh? I think the last three times they've went to Pittsburgh, they've gotten blown out 130-something to like 14.
It's never
or whatever it was
playing at Pittsburgh. It never is. Even when the great Peyton Manning was playing for the Colts, I don't think that particular team is better than the Colts. I think the Pittsburgh Steelers play better at home. That must be said for sure. I think that's what we can agree upon. I also believe that Big Ben has had enough rest up that he'll be kind of coming back to trying to prove, you know what I'm saying, trying to prove where he is in this league, right? So I kind of agree with you, 11-5. Some folks had the Colts going 13-3. I was like, whoa, slow down,
whoa,
man. What are you saying that I'm not? But they have, the Colts have a pretty good chemistry going into this year. So over $40 million in quarterback play that they're playing, you can only play one at a time. So put that into your mind, people. $40 million alone in quarterbacks. That's what we have right now. And then we have guys that basically have expiring contracts, either they're coming off their rookie deal or they're gonna be a free agent. That's the free agent period next year. And as we all both know, in the NFL, like it's not like they're gonna give max effort. That's basically what I'm trying to say. They're gonna give max effort, whoever it is. So now who the Colts gonna sign afterwards when all the dust settles? If they do get to a Super Bowl, or if they do go 13-3 or 11-5, whatever the case may be, I think the Colts have a list of guys that they're gonna sign. Right, Darius Leonard probably on that one side. Right, Quentin Nelson on another side. You know what I mean? But there's probably a list that guys they want to see, show and prove, you know what I mean? And there might be a place. But like I said, guys are going to be giving max effort this year so that they, if the Colts don't offer them, that they look good playing in a uniform on another team. So this is, like I said on the live, the Colts have a very competitive schedule ahead of them. I don't know why anybody said it was a cake schedule or easy schedule. But they have a very competitive schedule, and Ballard has put together very good teams to go against that schedule. I can't really thumb down the money that they're paying Phillip Rivers to come in here and to lead these Colts. If he ain't got it, Brandon, shoot, they'll pull him, it'll be a hard pull. It won't be easy, you know what I mean? There'll be some media drama around it, right? But they'll have Jacoby Brissett, you know what I'm saying, as a backup. So 11-5, I'm with it. I totally.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not concerned with the Rivers signing to be a head coach at his old high school. Some people thought, hey, that's one foot out the door. I don't really think so. I think it's something he's always wanted to do. It's just a coach in waiting. So whenever he gives it up, there's some other coaches that have done that. I compare it to Drew Brees. NBC's already said Drew Brees is going to be in the announcing booth next year. So does that mean that Drew Brees has one foot out the door already? No, it doesn't. It just means he's getting himself lined up after football, what he wants to do. And the fact that you can go ahead and sign these people, you know what? So be it. Phillip's old high school wants him to be head coach. Guess what? We're going to have an interim coach until you're done. I have no problem with that. Colts fans shouldn't need to worry about that whatsoever. John, it was reported today, T.Y. Hilton interviewed T.Y. Hilton. Hilton says he wants to be a Colt for life. He's entering a contract year. But he said it's up to Mr. Ballard and Mr. Irsay if they want to bring him back. But he wants to be a Colt for life. I know you've been on and off the old T.Y. Hilton train. Should the Colts go ahead and lock him up before the season, or should we wait until the season's over to make those decisions?
They got to look at his health, where he's at. That's his biggest – that him catching the ball and him running routes and him being a leader in that locker room has never been the question with T.Y. Hilton, never. And then it'll probably come down to years. You know what I mean? How many years that Colts are kind of willing to offer to and invest in him. There should probably be some talk about it. They should kind of know where everybody's at. But T.Y. Hill's got to pay 85% of his games this year.
Yep. There is a report that the Rivers did not decide to come to Indianapolis. The Colts were prepared to trade for the Red Rifle, Andy Dalton. I saw your tweet, John. Is it too late to go back on it? So you're more aboard the Andy Dalton bandwagon than Philip Rivers.
Andy Dalton, yeah, if they had traded for Andy Dalton, that means Andy Dalton, we probably would have gave up some capital that we probably didn't want to give up. That would have made us a lesser team. Andy Dalton's probably just a level higher. I wouldn't even say he's a level higher than Jacoby Brissett. So we really would have a quarterback controversy now, wouldn't we? Philip Rivers probably has maybe 6 feet into the Hall of Fame. If he retired today, he'd probably get in. But you know, it'd be somebody had to kind of squint and think about. So there's really no like argument there. But I'm kind of glad it didn't go down. And like I said, the Red Rock is playing in Texas.
Mac Wilson of the Browns calls out the Colts during the schedule release. First thing I said was, who the hell is Mac Brown? And secondly, I can't wait for week 5 when they play each other now. So we're going to have a little Colts-Browns rivalry.
Yeah, who would have thought? I don't know why the Browns need to kind of stay out of the media, don't they? Either from whoever. Their biggest thing is that they, on paper, everybody thinks they're great. But unfortunately, you know what I'm saying, football, you have to play those games on the field. I don't, you know, it may be, you know, I don't know why guys need locker room, you know what I'm saying, juice, because that's what Cleveland kind of does for teams. Good luck with that. It hasn't worked out for
them. Absolutely. John, I don't know how many times I got to sit there. This is the sound I'm going to make with it, because I'm making you money.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, the cash registers are going off. John, if I can get it to stop, there we go. Okay. So I talked about two, three episodes ago about Cam Newton, John. I mentioned it again last week. And then earlier, a couple days ago, John, I sent you a screenshot that there is a report that the Seahawks are interested in Cam Newton. Didn't I say that first? Didn't I say that a while back that, hey, this is where Cam should look to go and it would be a perfect fit? Come on now.
I want to give you props and also pat myself like I was Barry Horowitz in the WWF back in the 80s on the back, man. That's kind of the reason why we kind of started the show, man, because like a lot of times me and you would be talking about something at our previous job or whatever, and we would kind of call it, and you know, and then another bigger sports personality would, you know, say it a week later. I'm like, dude, we might be on something a little bit, you know. So yeah, man. More to the story. Yeah, Brandon called it because everybody was kind of thinking, wow, Cam's gonna go to New England, or no, Cam should probably go to Los Angeles and become a star. You know what I'm saying? No, Cam's probably gonna sign with Seattle where he can be Cam Newton and still be a media darling and be an insurance policy if Russell Wilson, you know what I'm saying, needs a week or two off. I kind of like that. That connection there. And then again, pat yourself on the back for calling it.
Exactly. Yeah, felt good. John, what's your thoughts? And I know we're shifting gears real quick from the NFL to college, but MAC sports with the conference tournaments, they're going to kind of limit them and do away with some of the normalness that we would have from the conferences. Is this a scary trend that could happen to others?
It potentially could happen to others. Here's the thing. College sports, even, you know, saying before, you know, saying the virus, college sports is getting ready to go through a change. And where top 30 guys, basketball guys, are kind of going to be looking at, should I go to school and be a one and done, or should I go to turn pro and go to the developmental league? That's going to be, so like some of the revenues are like, you know what I'm saying? But here's the thing. There's always going to be guys that get opportunities at the larger universities. So it is kind of unfortunate that there now it's no longer it's going to be a postseason play for games in the MAC. Like, I think what did they say, softball and baseball. I'm trying. What was another one? Volleyball. They wouldn't have postseason play. Didn't say they were going to cut the program though. You know, so. Maybe that kind of left up to the individual universities if they want to keep some of those secondary programs alive or not. The money, the revenue is going to change for college athletics, whether anybody understands that or not. Just guess what, Brandon? This would be one of those things. Oh man, those guys told us before. Yeah, the revenue. And I'm telling you right now, the revenue for college sports is going to change, and like what kind of players everybody gets is kind of going to change. Kind of today, Eastern, Joel Easton entered the transfer portal to go to a different school. And I know we're kind of talk about that in a little bit largely as well, but he's probably going to end up at a mid-major somewhere, you know, and whether he does well or not. But those are the kind of things that are going to kind of change, because kids go to school because they want to be pro. Let's put it all on the table. Kids, a football guy, whether he goes to Marion University, which is a Division III or Division II. Shame on me if it's somebody. Brandon, I reached out to Marion, so I'm not trying to call him out, but you know, you get my drift. So, but whether you're at Marion University or whether you're at IUPUI or Ball State University or you're at Purdue, guys go to school because they want to be developed. They want to go somehow get turned pro. The thing about it is, man, everybody's not necessarily going to be an NBA player. But there are other, you know, careers in basketball. But the MAC, to get back to the point, the MAC it is somewhat concerning. But it is, like I said, the MAC kind of got in front of them, and they kind of see what's gonna come down the pipeline. That's what I believe.
Okay. Give me one second. Sorry, typing something. I think it will be. Before we go to the next topic, let's go to the Purdue. Let's talk about them real quick. Obviously, John, there was an interview today with Matt Painter on the Dan Dockett Show that's picked up national attention now with Sports Illustrated, ESPN. I listened to it live, and I quickly sent you the link and everything because I thought it was definitely worth it. Matt Painter told it like it was. He didn't say anything that was wrong. He told it how it was. He pulled back the curtain. It was 30 minutes of him being very candid, very open, very honest. And he said some things that, you know, some of these players, they may get their feelings hurt. But it wasn't even
It wasn't even hurtful.
Not at all.
It was just the truth. Everybody, I get it. Sometimes I think, dream that he is me. Like Mike, you don't have that talent, son. So, and just because here's the thing. Like, it's hard to pick on guys who are developing. And that's one thing. So I remember what I saw on the court when I saw him. And I remember from last year, from this year. And then I went back and looked at the stats. But even before Painter came on and said what he said, and he kind of regressed. And like now, they got other guys that they recruited in. And like, he can't deal with if you can't deal with competition, then you go into not my words, Brandon. If you go into a lesser conference, an NAIA school or a mid-major school, thinking that they're gonna give you more shots just because you're a little bit bigger than everybody, yeah, you probably put up better points, better assists and rebounds or whatever. But at the end of the day, the scouts are gonna still remember that you left a dynamic program in Purdue, and you averaged, you know, what he averaged, went from 7 last year to 4, right? And the only way he'd be able to get on somebody's radar, Brandon, is if he went to a mid-major and averaged 35 points and put up a triple-double. That's when you could say, hey, man, Matt Painter and them didn't know what the hell they had. But
I think one quote
There's no way. I'm sorry, Brandon. Let me get my. There's no way they would have left. They would. There's no way that he would never not got on the floor if he was able to do that right now. So go ahead, Brandon. But no, Brandon.
No,
like
I think
Brandon,
you know.
Brandon said the truth. It was great. It was. It was a great. It was a great interview. He gave great dialogue. He said it was how hard it is to. He said how hard it is even to be a great Big Ten player like Swanigan and like Carson Edwards. And like Vince, I'm sorry, yeah. And like, what's the other kid's name? Vince Edwards, who went there a couple years ago, right? Played small forward. But yeah, how hard is for them to get on to the? They were like all conference, all Big Ten conference, and if not all Americans. And dude, they still on G League rosters. That's how hard it is, you know. And I'm not saying the G League is
terrible,
man. I follow G League, man. It's very competitive. But like the G League also had Victor Oladipo. Correct me if I'm wrong. He had a during his rehab. They got vets on there, so you know, saying getting minutes, trying to get back into it.
Yeah.
So it's ultra competitive to get to the NBA, and like if you can't dominate on your team to dominate your conference, then NBA, yeah, right.
Yeah, let me bring everybody to attention. If you haven't had a chance to listen to the interview, I've got some excerpts from the quotes from it. But as you're talking about Nojel Eastern and Matt Harms, but Seth Greenberg was on afterwards, and I think Greenberg had a great quote to Dan Dockich was, "I know Nojel Eastern put his name in the portal and all that jazz. Let me ask you something. That guy played about 25 to 28 minutes a game. Does he think all of a sudden he's going to change schools and he's going to find a jump shot?" That was Seth Greenberg, and I thought it was a great quote. Explain it. But to those that didn't follow, I've got some of the quotes here. I'm going to lay them out for you so you can have an idea. From Matt Painter, telling Dan, "I wasn't running around blaming Gene Katie because I wasn't any good. I was averaging 8 points a game. I wasn't putting my name in the draft. I try to take a step look back at from their perspective. How did you better yourself? Are you going to play against other better competition in that league you went to? No. When I look at that position, it worked for Caleb Swanigan in that position. It worked for A.J. Hammonds in that position. It worked for Carl Landry in that position. It worked out for Juwan Johnson. Do you want me to keep going? It worked for Isaac Haas. Travion Williams is going to be a great player, and it's hard to reel off that many names in 15 years of coaching for just one position. In reality, Travion Williams just beat him out. Plain and simple. You may have gotten a degree from Purdue, but you're not a Boilermaker if you walk out that door in the end. These guys are like, hey, I want to be a pro. And I'm like, why don't we be all conference come college first? Why don't we try that out? So you'll get the guys to average 4, 6, 9, or 10 points and say, coach, I want you to develop me into a pro. Well, why don't you start to work like a pro first? I don't think he was wrong one single bit. Anything that Painter said, he may have hurt some of the Nojel's feelings or Matt Harms' feelings. Now, Harms, he said he was okay with because he earned his degree and moved on. What's better for him? But I think it caught him off guard with Nojel Eastern transferring. I think Nojel putting his name in the hat. I think the kid just wants to try to get himself out there more to showcase himself to get more opportunity. But the problem is, like you said, John, he doesn't have a jump shot. He's not going to go out and make a name of himself at a smaller school. I mean, it's just – the kid's delusional. He's put his name in the draft twice, and he's not like what the scouts have said. Do you think the scouts are going to say anything better by going to a smaller school?
But I'm a scout. I am. I promise you. You know what I mean? He's got a good NBA body. Other than that, he doesn't do anything else special. And that is what the NBA is about. You have to either shoot the ball at a hot clip, special, you got to be able to dunk. You know what I'm saying? I'm not saying everybody does, but you know what I'm saying? Special? Think about Westbrook. How special is he? He can't shoot. Right? Right? You know what I mean?
Yep.
How special is James Harden? And I know all these guys are all-stars. Right? But I know we all got surprised by Tyler Hero, but Calipari's a little different. Calipari knows who can play. He does. And what he does is make NBA guy players, NBA next level guys play in his little system. But again, he knows he got the best guys. I'm just being honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. I think the biggest thing with Painter was the fact he told him, hey, kids these days need to embrace their problems and embrace adversity and fight it. Don't run from it and do this one and leave to another school.
But Brandon, even in the interview, this is what I took from it. He sounded like a coach, but he also sounded like your friend. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
He was like a lifelong – he explained the lifelong relationship that he ever had with Gene Katie and how it helped him get the job in Missouri. It helped him get – you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Whatever. He said, who would I look like averaging 8 points and having to guard Cal Percheny and Jim Jackson? Here they're putting up, you know what I'm saying, they're putting up All-American numbers. Who would I look like going to Gene Katie? Mm-hmm. Hey, man, hey, Coach Katie. I'm thinking about transferring back to, you know what I'm saying, stay home state because I don't think you're giving me enough time. You know what I mean? I don't think you're giving me enough, you know what I'm saying, enough credit, whatever, man. So, again, man, I encourage everybody to listen to that interview. I didn't have my, you know what I'm saying, war words with Dan Dockich last couple weeks, man. If you want to talk about it.
That's A-plus interview. There's even IU fans. IU fans loved that interview.
Because that is, you know what, Brandon, and then I'll let you take it over. That's like in the middle of what we want. We want to coddle. They want to be coddled, but we also want to coach them. Mm-hmm. We also remember what Coach Katie. If you think Coach Katie wasn't a bulldog on his players, you got to be kidding. I'm not saying was as hard as Bob Knight, but he was a bulldog. But so that's kind of what we want. I mean, that's what IU wants. And I don't say, you know, they want a coddling guy that also can kind of tell the truth. And right now, I don't think we necessarily had. I don't think that college basketball period is like that. And that's why I think this kind of story was national.
Yeah, I thought it was like I said, A+. As soon as I heard it, John, I had to send stuff to you to get you to listen to it. I think he explained everything professionally. I think he balled back that curtain. Also, by the way, Matt Painter, friend of the program.
He said he was both
friend of the program.
There's no way. Right. There's no way one of those guys would have got recruited if Painter didn't like him. You know what I mean?
John, that's our interview. He did. That's our interview. Doc did. So we're gonna get Coach Painter on one of these days. We're gonna get him on. I promise.
Yeah.
All right, John. Next, we're gonna talk about. Let's see, The Last Dance, episodes 7 and 8. We're gonna talk about those. A little bit snippets from the show, but first off, I got to play this clip, if I can play it. That's the bell sounding, John. I'm sitting there with family on Mother's Day, enjoying a great Mother's Day on Sunday, and lo and behold, I have your tweets pinned on my phone, so anytime you send one out, it shows up as a notification. So, and I start seeing you just hammering. I'm not going to say his show, but he's a colleague of mine. He's helped me a few times, but on another sports website and stuff. But I see you going back, hammering back and forth with this guy who's called you a Jordan stan, the biggest Jordan fan of all time, apparently. So I'm going to give you a couple minutes here, John, for our radio waves. Our listeners want to know. I want you to give your side of this, and also – the floor is yours. It's open forum for you. I hope he calls in. I've sent him the thing to call in if he wants to call in and discuss it.
He can.
So
I hope it is. It ain't no malice.
I hope he calls.
Right. There is no. There never is, and there never will be any malice when I debate anybody about any particular thing. I do have my, beliefs about how things are, just like anybody else, right? So. Guys in certain communities hold Michael Jordan's foot to flames because he never chose a side in politics. And I know we aren't political souls. So Michael Jordan said this whole big thing about Republicans buy shoes too. And like automatically it's like now, some African-American people just because you might think a little liberal don't necessarily mean you're a Democrat. Okay. And again, put that aside, right? Because, just put it aside. One, it's sports, right? You know, some reporter thought, let me get a hot one from Michael, and they got one. I got a hot one from Michael, and it's kind of following around his whole career or whatever, right? But people kind of take that and say, hey, Michael is not community active in his community. Like, so they wanted him to be like Muhammad Ali. They wanted him to take a stance like that. They wanted him to take a stance like Jim Brown. And that was kind of laughable. Once you check like Jim Brown did do a whole lot of social activism, and his, I can never take that away from Jim Brown. But like Jim Brown also got a lot of shady stuff about his own personal, you know, he got a lot of skeletons that kind of played out in the media, you know what I mean? So don't be telling me about this dude over here when, come on, man, he's still alive, and shoot, man, he ain't necessarily a great guy to be lauding, right, Jim Brown. So everybody wants, you know, Muhammad, you know, want that Muhammad Ali moment, right, or guys to take that Muhammad Ali moment and or do what Kaepernick did for what it, but again, man, when somebody makes when somebody like that makes a statement, remember, it's hard for an athlete. It's very hard for another athlete to say, okay, so now you want me, because you got offended, you want me to take my dream. Because everybody got, you know what I'm saying, everybody got their own my dream. So, like, you can have your own, everybody has community. Everybody does or should. But you want to take my dream because you got offended or you felt slighted. So here's the thing. Another thing that kind of black eye for Michael Jordan. Not again, that people kind of hold him against. Craig Hodges didn't want to stand up for the national anthem, right? Because of, like, you know, saying he got, you know, you don't, he had his issues, right? I encourage everybody, saying though, Brandon, I encourage everybody to learn about that story and learn about what Craig Hodges' statement was about before you start telling about why Michael Jordan didn't come help him. See, that's what they're. Well, why did Michael Jordan come? Well, Craig said Michael Jordan didn't want to help him. But guess what? There was it's a whole bunch of other millionaire guys in the league that knew of what was going on with Craig, and nobody came to Craig's aid. Craig Hodges eventually made his way back to the NBA through Phil Jackson and some other sources, some other folks that he used to play for or whatever. Right. So again, Michael Jordan didn't stand up for Craig Hodges as a teammate or whatever, because he had a social, because Craig wanted to stand up for social injustice or whatever, right? I get it. Here's the thing. We're in the middle of two eras. We're in the middle of what Muhammad Ali believed, and we're in the middle of where Colin Kaepernick did four years ago, right? So in between time, we had a lot of guys with success, and now I ain't saying none of these guys sold out, right? Kobe, great, successful. Shaq, successful. I'm talking about commercially. Duncan, Jordan, King up, successful. Off the court, LeBron, right? So we talk a lot of power, a lot of influence, you know what I mean? So those guys are supposed to just say, wait a minute. Because remember, Brandon, and I don't want to make this a racial thing, but, like, the NBA is probably the most player-power league that we have. Where guys can say, hey, man, we didn't like what the owner said, get rid of him. And that's what happened with the Clippers, right, 6 years ago. But here's the thing, though, Brandon. If we think that bigoted owner wasn't bigoted 22 years ago when Elgin Baylor worked for him, then we're all crazy. It's just that we found out that he was a bigot, right? But like I just said, the NBA player said, we ain't playing. So ain't that power, too? You know what I'm saying? So here's the thing, though. So, Jay wrote an article, just Jay Graves, right? I ain't going to say it's a hoop show. Jay wrote an article saying Michael Jordan ain't never did anything or ain't never had an opinion in 36 years. So, basically, that's from 1984 to now. Michael Jordan never did anything to get back to his community, which was an all right, all out lie. You can hold his feet to the flame because he didn't help his teammate, right? He didn't help a brother. I'm just being honest with you, right? I'm black on both sides. I am. He didn't help a brother. You know what I mean? Right, in a time of need, or, you know what I'm saying, whatever. That's something you can talk about. But to say he'd never give back, are you kidding? He gave it over $30 million. Now, I ain't got $30 million, Brandon. I don't know, shoot, you know, so, but he gave over $30 million in, like, the last 5 years. On the course in the 90s and everywhere else, he also gave money to charitable organizations, right? But I'm saying $30 million in the last 5 years alone. $5 million to the National African American Museum of Art. $5 million. I don't see nobody, a whole lot of people writing checks like that. Maybe it don't splash on your news feed, or maybe you just ignore it or whatever, or I don't know. So I kind of went on Jay's page and said, hey, man, check the facts, man. I was like, your timeline might be a little off there, bud. And that's kind of where things kind of spiral from there. His platform, I found it a little sensational. So I thought, you know, Like I said, I ain't got no bad going. I don't have no issue. I have no issue going against any type of any dog, whether they think they're a big dog or whatever. Whether it be Dan Dockage, who I got into it with because he turned his show into politics, and he didn't know what he was talking about. And this past week he turned the show he became an instant virologist. And I asked him, so anyway, dude, you got a lot of degrees, and you got a lot of coaching in you, bro, but you ain't no doctor. You ain't Dr. Fucci, or however you pronounce the doctor's name, right? So, you know, again, it's never personal because you know what? I still listen to Dan Dockage because he got great takes and insights, and he brings great people on there to listen to. It's just that sometimes, things go a little awry. There's no way just because he said something or said something back to me, he's going to automatically offend me. Guess what? I think Dan listens to and watches our tweets, right? I know he does. Crossroads Sports and Three Foolish Men, right? So back to Jay. So me and Jay went back and forth, man. And again, man, to call me a George fan, the biggest Isaiah Thomas fan, stop. The biggest Larry Bird fan, stop.
And you called it clickbait. Correct.
It's real clickbait. So again, when you offend me, I'm going to offend you. 36 years, stop, man. You need to recant that. I mean, I'm not saying what he needs to do. I was suggesting that you probably should recant that because that ain't the truth. And then, unfortunately, like, people want to tag on because you know what, Brandon? They taking their fandom into some uncharted waters, man. Again, man, nobody's ever going to be perfect. And I would probably wager dollars to donuts on who anybody that just kind of went on whatever his social medias was, whether it was on his Facebook page or his Twitter feed, talking about Jay, whatever, you know what I'm saying, whoever co-signed anything they were saying about Michael Jordan being a bad person to follow off the court because, like, what he didn't do for somebody else. I chimed in. So, like, no, that ain't true. Here's the fact, right? Because here's the thing, though, Brandon.
Uh-huh.
Here's another fact that I want to share. And it's not, I mean, again, Michael Jordan got more African Americans working for him on his team, the Charlotte Hornets, than any other team in the league. Right? So again, empowering people in a different way, other than let's go out here and march, let's go out here and protest. You know what I'm saying? Because there's two ways to there's two ways to skin a cat. Shit, probably three. Pardon my French. You know. So again, nobody's trying to say ain't gotta be. Let's go throw a rock. Or let's go ride out and let's go get mad. Let's try to figure this out. Let's try to figure out why first. Because, again, nobody, Brandon, when anybody can tell me this story about why Michael Jordan didn't help, shit, where were you at? Where was everybody else at? Where was Scottie Pippen at? Where was Dennis Rodman at? They black. Where was Cliff Levinson? He's black. So we was just wanting Michael Jordan to do it just because it's Michael Jordan. You know what I mean? So again, the NBA, so I you can say all that. Right? Because here's the other shoe getting ready to drop, little brother. Brandon's my brother, right? Chris Jackson, Abdul-Raouf changed his name, right? And then at one point, he was still playing for the Denver Nuggets in 1996. He was playing for the Denver Nuggets, and he didn't want to stand up for the anthem. Wasn't right with what the league tried to do to him, suspended him for a game or whatever, tried to, you know, a ping-pong him. Guess what? Denver traded him, and not one player, not Robert Pack, not Dikembe Mutombo, not anybody on that team said anything, right? So I was going to blame Michael Jordan because the league told Chris Jackson he couldn't play no more. You know what I'm saying? Nobody holds the people accountable. Hold the team accountable. That would be kind of write an article saying, well, Jerry Reinsdorf, why'd you let this happen? Right? These dudes are making a whole lot of money for you. You want to Michael Jordan? Okay, put up, yeah. So, you know, again, man, it ain't for me to go round and round. It's definitely ain't for me to get insulted, right? Call me a Jordan Stan, right? Or Jordan Nair. That's the case. So we had I go fact checking. I don't have a problem with anybody trying to fact check me because guess what? You better be on your best day, brother, because you try to fact check me, I already fact checked it. Before I hit the tweet, before I hit send, before I put it on Facebook, before I write notes for a freaking reason on hardcore paper, I do my due diligence, right? I even fact checked myself from last week's live, man. I was talking so fast, I was so excited, right? And I said Don Shula coached the New York Jets, to the Super Bowl. Now the Jets have won a Super Bowl, but it wasn't with Don Shula. You know what I'm saying? I went back and fact checked myself, man. So, man, miss me with what you think you know about what happened back then. fact, do your homework, and that's my 2 cents, if not 10.
Okay. Yeah, I agree. Well said. You know, I knew there was a lot of emotion in there on Sunday, and like I said, I don't have a problem with obviously you're my partner. I don't have a problem with Jay. Jay, I see
problem
Jay out of different sporting
venues. That's the thing, Brandon. I don't know that dude. I know that dude from debate and whatnot, man. I got no problem, man. This is, remember, bro, dude. You want me to put back the curtain? Remember, this is me and Brandon's hobby that we take very, very seriously. But remember, I just said it's a hobby. He never said nothing about my family or anything, and I never would. I never would say anything about. I never, because like that would cross the line. Believe me, and that's something that I will never do. You know what I'm saying? But hopefully, it ain't no hard feelings because it's not with me.
Yep, absolutely. So it's I got nothing but love for. Oh yeah, no love, nothing but love for
yep.
Jay Graves. He's a good guy.
Yep.
Dan too. I like what he does. I like what he does. He just, you know,
yep.
Hey, that's what sports is, people. You debate some, you hate them one day, you love them the next, and
right.
Hey, that's life, and I love it because we're getting some traction. We're going to give him some love, some traction. I hope I can get him on the show. He ain't calling in, but I'm sure I'll run into him this fall when we get some sports going. But anyways, on to The Last Dance, John. I've got 2 sound clips I want to play before we get started.
Okay.
And then we'll dive into it. This one, first one is talking about Michael Jordan being the tough guy that aired on the episode.
People were afraid of him. We were his teammates when we were afraid of him. And there was just fear.
That's the ball when I threw it to you. I just threw it to you.
Ignore this guy. He's dumb, he's overplayed.
The fear factor of MJ was so, so thick.
Yeah, let's not get it wrong. He was a jerk. He crossed the line numerous times. But as time goes on and you think back about what he was actually trying to accomplish, you're like, yeah, he was a hell of a teammate. He was pushing us all to be better because he wanted to win. And guess what? It worked.
We kind of needed that, you know what I'm saying? I needed him to be the bad guy, the tough guy.
So, talking about Jordan being the tough guy, the bad guy, his will to win, his drive to win. And then, John, to me, this, to me, was the most emotional part. And you probably could have ended the damn series with this quote here.
When people see this, they're going to say, well, he wasn't really a nice guy. He may have been a tyrant. Oh, well, that's you, because you never won anything. I wanted to win, but I wanted them to win and be a part of that as well. Like, I don't have to do this. I'm only doing it because it is who I am. That's how I played the game. That was my mentality. If you don't want to play that way, don't play that way. Break.
So Michael Jordan got him very emotional there towards the end of that one. Just talking about his drive, his will to win. And you know what? He was an asshole at times. I mean, he was a prick to be around. But he only knew one way to win, and if that's the way that got him there, yeah. Now, maybe not every player is going to have that same will to win, that same will to go, but that was Michael's way of trying to get people to jump on board with him to get that his psyche, his thought process. When he cussed out, got in fight with Phil, with Steve Kerr and all these guys that, you know, they're coming in off of a – they didn't win the three-peat. They're on the coattails of the three-peat team. And Michael Jordan's like, well, who the hell are you coming in here thinking it's all joking around and stuff when I bust my ass for those 3 titles and you're just coming in here, you know, listening to that part of it even. You know, and I saw that side from Michael. I was like, okay, I understand. Yeah, he was an asshole at times. And, you know, the documentary, we knew it was going to come out in one of these episodes, and it finally did. But I don't fault him for that, John. And I think you did a pretty interesting tweet that made me think was when you compared the way Michael Jordan motivates people to win, all for the win, whatever it takes to win, and you compared it with Bob Knight. When Bob Knight did whatever it took to win, to be that winning mentality, if there was that comparison. So I want to know first off, John, before we get – what was your thoughts on those 2 clips that I just played about that was aired during the documentary?
the great thing about it is Coach Stallings kind of this week is that, yeah, that's a, you know what I'm saying, come off as a jerk, man. But look who's leading the practice and sprints and whatnot. It ain't like he, you know what I'm saying, it ain't like he's telling you we got to play this way and he's coasting. You know what I'm saying? He's leading by example. Mm-hmm. It's a locker room, so there's gonna be different things that's kind of be said. These are physical guys. Whether you know what I'm saying, if people think basketball guys are lesser than football guys are roughhouses. You know what I'm saying? You're mistaken. You know what I'm saying? Basketball guys just know not to hit the face. You know what I mean? Football guys don't really care. You know what I'm saying? Basketball fights do happen. With me, I kind of knew these stories, Brandon. You know what I'm saying? If you're a hoop head, a hoop knowledgeable junkie, you kind of know the way Michael Jordan kind of played, ran practice and whatnot, or got in fights with guys. This came off very hypocritical because him and Isaiah Thomas could be best friends if they didn't play against one another, right? It's just that Isaiah didn't have the talent. Isaiah did not have Michael Jordan's talent. They got the same kind of drive to, like, man, it's me against the world, and, like, you better come on because I know I can't do it by myself, but if you can't, then I'm gonna try to toughen you up so that you can, because that's how we're going to win. And that's the truth. Because I guarantee you, Larry Bird, you know, we can go back to anybody's championship dynasty, and I can't wait for the Spurs. You know what I'm saying? Everybody thinks they're kind of a boring team, right? Kind of boring to watch or whatever. But I guarantee you, once they get a little bit older and start wanting to, you know what I'm saying, hear their bell ring or hear their stories to be taught, they'll tell you how mentally tough you have to be to win. I haven't necessarily heard anything like a fight or anything like that with that particular organization, but, you know, Shaq and Kobe, you know, guys toughening up or whatever, man, it's hard to win. And once you start winning, you get thirsty for it. You want to win more and more. So, like I said, because remember, like I said, it's hard to win. It's hard to win. The other guys trying as well. So, I'm glad all this is kind of playing out the way it is, man. People kind of lost. I was kind of the one people kind of lost it. You know what I'm saying? I fed into it too, because I was like, man, that's the most. I'm glad it's out. That's the most hypocritical I've ever seen. The Bad Boys were painted as these bullies. And here, this dude is a bully as damn self. But here's the thing, though. Like I said, he's the bigger bully with the bigger talent level. Here's the thing, Brandon, and Crossroads listening audience. You don't go six times undefeated without having a little bit of edge to you. Okay? Bob Knight comparison is just like another comparison I would say to Bill Belichick. If anybody doesn't run and remember Bob Knight, right, for whatever reason. Those dudes are nuts. Those dudes are crazy. Those dudes eat, sleep, and defecate their sport. And they take it personal. Everything what Porter says, everything that another coach might say, everything, even a coach on their – so when I look at it like that, I get it. Greatness. You don't necessarily have to be that way. I know that's what Michael Jordan's coach – said college coach said, Dean said, you don't have to be mean that way. But I would imagine if we pulled his curtain, there would be some edges to him as well. You know, we know this edge with Coach K. You know what I'm saying? You don't win in various areas. You don't, like I said, you don't go. Magic Johnson comes with a smile, but I guarantee you, he's got some edge to him. You know what I mean? So Michael Jordan, like I said, he's the most ultra competitive sportsman I've ever seen, and that's what I kind of took away from these last two episodes.
Okay, we talked about this Sonics team that took on Michael Jordan, and that was a good Sonics team, by the way. I think it was very underrated with Sean Kemp, Gary Payton, Hershey Hawkins, Sam Perkins. This squad, they can hoop for sure. And, George Karl is a coach. But I got a nice chuckle, John, when, MJ says, I ain't got a problem with the glove. Gary's talking about checking him. And he says, yeah, I can check him the whole time, and we would have won. And then Michael's just sitting there grinning on that iPad again. He says, the glove, I ain't got no problem with the glove. The glove had a hole in it, though, towards the end of the career.
Yeah, of course, man, because he wasn't as fast anymore. But – I like the glove. I do. But not even nah. His glove wasn't as good as some of the guys Michael Jordan beat.
Mm-hmm.
To be honest with you, he wasn't as good as Thomas. Glove has great defense. Anybody needs to, I'll pull some video for some folks, man. But Glove took some heat this week for sure.
I thought it was astonishing when you kind of dove into the mind of Michael Jordan. What gets him motivated? What gets him hyped for a game or when it's crunch time to play? Some of the moments, John, he finds a purpose to dominate a team over the stupidest, littlest things. B.J. Armstrong sitting there, you know, talking smack after he hits a shot, and Michael's in the locker room with a baseball bat and a cigar in his mouth, swinging the bat, saying, "Well, that's easy to talk when you got the first talk shit 2 minutes left in the game when you're up by six. Let's start from the first quarter when there's 48 minutes to go." Even George Karl, walking by George Karl before the finals, and Karl not saying a word to him. I was like, okay, that's how we're going to be. So Michael instilled that in his head as, this is what I'm going to do to beat you. Another thing, poor LeBradford Smith, John. I didn't even heard of this guy. It comes out that it wasn't even a real story. Michael made it all up just to get himself motivated that LeBradford came out and scored 30-some points, and they played in the very next game, and he did the 30-some points in the first quarter or first half. And that's just Michael just finding different ways to get himself motivated, to get him in that psyche, to turn on that extra level. And it was just, to me, it was interesting how he could do that and what ways he found to do that. Nick Anderson saying, hey, 45 ain't 23. Well, you pissed him off there, mm-hmm. Nick Anderson. And by the way, that was a really good Magic team as well. Very good. Mm-hmm. Penny mm-hmm. before he got injured, Shaq, Dennis mm-hmm. Scott, Nick Anderson, Horace Grant. That's one of the few teams that should have won a title, if you ask me. Should have won a title in the 90s.
Yep.
But what were your thoughts on some of those ways Michael Jordan kind of motivated himself, whether it be real or fake?
Brandon, I'll be honest with you. When I look at the tape, LeBron James is more athletic, if it's possible. LeBron James is more athletic than Michael Jordan. But he just don't have – he takes things personal. LeBron does take things personal. He just mm-hmm. – not like Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan, I told you this. I believe Michael Jordan made this so that it would take – LeBron was going to win this for. Not to pee on anybody else's team parade, but LeBron was going to win this for this year. Hey, you know what, Brandon? I got King getting to six. I mean, I think he can get to six, but he's gonna have to get to the finals 12 times. So anyway, but athletically, LeBron is more athletic, if that's possible. But like Michael Jordan, just like got another engine. It's like I said, the engine is fueled by what you say to him. Incredible.
Do you feel that? And because I do, and I just wonder if it's just my thoughts or something. I feel like we could see another side of LeBron just based off of watching this documentary, getting into the head of Michael Jordan, what motivates him, the things that Michael did before practice. Do you think that LeBron's thinking, damn, this might instill something into him, or we may get even another level?
Nah,
not
LeBron
to Michael Jordan
way.
Status, but he can take some stuff and use it towards his own game.
I think he could. LeBron is. This is what I respect about him, man. He never gonna say nothing. He never has said anything slick about Michael Jordan. You know what I'm saying? Or any of his others. He's very respectful in that regard, regardless of what anybody in the streets or anybody on the TV kind of says about him and comparing him. I would hope that LeBron, being a student of the game that I know he is, that maybe he does take a little bit, because Kobe did it. You know what I'm saying? Hey, man.
Yep.
Kobe did it. Kobe took everything. You know what I'm saying? Kobe had great talent. Let's not say, I don't want to just say, but Kobe, you know, you can go back to the tapes. He's saying, he tells people, I took everything. I learned it. I watched it. I mirrored him, you know? And then I went to go learn from another great, Hakeem Olajuwon, and learn how to be a better player in the post. So, mm-hmm. you would hope that LeBron, being – so, which should be somewhat of a student of the game, especially when Kobe Bryant sent that tweet. You know what I'm saying? Take it over here, bro. I mean, I'm paraphrasing. Take it over here, bro. Take it over here, bud. Mm-hmm. So, I want everybody, not just LeBron, no, I'm cheering for him, but everybody. Everybody should take something for that. Like I said on the live broadcast, man, every time I watch it, Brandon, I go pick up a basketball. And the song ain't playing in my head. Sometimes I dream that he is me, but it just makes you want to. For me, man, this makes me want to go shoot. And I ain't gonna run no 5-on-5 or hell even 3-on-3, but it just makes me want to go play and shoot layups and whatever else, man. Because man, watching him is incredible. Watching Michael Jordan play mm-hmm. is incredible. And I ain't saying nobody else ain't incredible either. But man, watching him is like the penultimate.
Yep, I agree. Couple other things I have, John, from those episodes, real quick. I was interested by Michael's comments when Scotty acted like a baby and didn't take the shot against the Knicks and went to Kukoc. And Michael saying, yeah, that's going to follow Scotty. And Scotty saying, if I could have to do it again, I would. Like, sorry it happened, but if he had to do it again. And you saw their faces in the locker room. Phil, after the game, he wasn't happy. He's like, oh, shit, we got to deal with this now.
Yeah. I mean, they had a great culture in that Chicago. They had a culture of winning, something that they've become immune to here.
Poor Bill Cartwright, man. Poor Bill Cartwright.
They had a culture. Yeah, made him cry, man. Culture of winning, man. That's how they value wins, regardless of if Michael getting the credit or Dennis getting the credit or Scotty getting the credit. They have a culture of winning. Bill Cartwright, before his knee injury, was a number one overall draft pick that the foolhardy Knicks got rid of. I mean, I won't say foolhardy because they ended up with a Hall of Famer in Patrick Ewing, right? But, they didn't end up with the championships. But I'm not saying Bill Cartwright was going to win the championships for him. Like I said, he had got hurt. But again, man, that's a prideful locker room that a lot of times people don't think pros are that emotional, after a loss or after a shit. Hell, they won the game. Tony Kukoc is is highly underrated. As a basketball player, I'm not saying he would have been a Hall of Famer had he played on another team, but he probably would have had better stats. He did win a Sixth Man of the Year award, I do believe, one year. I don't know why he was with the Bulls, but he's a matchup problem. Tony Kukoc is a matchup problem, and is probably a better jump shooter than Scottie Pippen. So the matchup was him on Mason. Well, I love me some Anthony Mason. May he rest in peace. But Anthony Mason goes about 6'6". Tony Kukoc came in the league 6'11". Right? Mm-hmm. So, boom, boom, boom. I get it. Scottie Pippen, you would have thought the torch would have passed to you. And, after you had hit the shot or made the basket or went to whatever would have happened, you would have, got, an extra pair of wings that night or an extra beer or brew, down somewhere. It's a Chicago bar or whatever. But what's more important is that y'all won the game. Right. So
right.
some of that has kind of followed Scottie Pippen. It's kind of, it's kind of been brought back up here recently or whatever. But Tony Kukoc, that was the best play to go with. If you remember, Brandon, more close to home, man. If you remember, and we can probably pull the stats, man, Tony Kukoc was a bad matchup problem for the Pacers when the Pacers took him to seven. I feel like they put Kukoc in and we kind of coached. I feel like the Pacers, I don't want to say coasted because it was a tough ride going through the quarterfinals and even the opener. But Chris Mullin had a hard time, and Crozier had a hard time with Tony Kukoc. And I'm not picking on them, but Mullin was a starter, and Tony Kukoc just was a little bit taller than him, a little bit faster at that age. And like I said, Tony Kukoc is the matchup nightmare. So, like I said, that was the best case scenario. But unfortunately, Scottie Pippen, like I said, it's a bad teammate moment.
You kind of alluded to it, the Pacers and Bulls. Reggie and the Pacers are going to be in the next episode pretty heavy. I think there's going to we saw a little bit of them in the Michael Jordan his comeback. I remember, John, I was at that game when my MJ came back. I went with my dad. To the game that Jordan came back, and it's in 95. It was loud. I was 10 years old. It was loud. I do remember it being very loud. Maybe a Pacer fan, but John, I did have my Bulls 23 jersey on at that day. So, sorry, Reggie. But then, Reggie Miller saying, hey, he was confident that he could retire MJ in that series in 98 that we're going to be seeing here, that best of seven. So I'm excited to see that series. Obviously, it didn't happen, and we're the Pacers are the only team to take Michael Jordan to a Game 7 ever, I think, right? Eastern Conference Finals.
He never went seven with, Detroit, and he never went seven in the finals at all.
Yeah, so it'll be very interesting to see that show next Sunday night. It's gonna be sad. It's gonna be all over, John. So I may have to start watching it again. But there is a couple of other 30 for 30s that are gonna start coming out at the end of May. There's a two-parter on Lance Armstrong, with him Tour de France, and then his cancer and his doping that he was doing, the performance enhancing. There's another one on Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa chasing the record back in 98, the home run record. And then there's one more. I can't think who it is that they're having. It's going to be in the middle. I can't think who it was. But more 30 for 30s to come. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, I know some other ones are in the works. I know Kobe – he had, before he passed away, I know there were some things in the work already. I can't wait for that because if we think Michael Jordan was tough, man, Kobe Bryant, tough too. And I know even though he's retired here recently, man, I know Dwayne Wade actually got something in the works as well. So, like I said, a lot of things coming down the pipeline.
I actually did watch. There was a Dwayne Wade one that aired recently leading up to his – actually, it took a day, 24 hours, 48 hours before his last game and then 24 hours after his first game, but also led up to him playing elementary school all the way. So that one's already been aired. I think it's called A Life, A Way of Wade or something like that, but it was really, really good. I suggest if you're a basketball fan, you definitely need to watch that one for sure. John, some other notes, news and notes. Zion Williamson, his former marketing agent now, is claiming to that he received illegal benefits to attend Duke and will drop her case against Zion for $100 million. I think this lady just has nothing better to do. The fact that he doesn't want to be represented by you and you go out and do things like this, I think is a total BS move on her part.
Right.
Your thoughts on it?
Sounds like, man, maybe she was a go-between, a help. I don't know, man. You know, there's a way. Zion Williams is a very, very special kind of player. And, you know, and, like, behind the scenes is that it was a bidding war for his services between Kansas and Duke when he came down to his final two. I'm glad his name was never associated with Arizona because then we know everybody was on the take, right? That program's in and out of trouble, or Louisville too, right? In and out of trouble. Even with a new coach, they're in and out of trouble. Like I said, man, some of this kind of stuff is kind of gonna go away because now a lot of the top 10 guys or top 30 guys are gonna be looking at the G League trying to come into the league a little earlier. So a lot of some of this mess where we have agents or agencies or shoe companies represent themselves as anybody with an agenda trying to get said player to said university so they can get said check. Well, $100 million, that's a lot. Like, I get it, man. Maybe Zion Williams is representing, maybe his folks, maybe say, I'm just
he
saying,
doesn't even have that money yet.
Right. He doesn't even have the money. So they're trying to go on projected income or something like that. And it feels like a lot of rotten apples or whatever. I'm sure whatever negotiations, whatever we said, or whatever would happen, I'm sure they probably got compensated at some point. I'm not saying it was by Duke. They've never been in a type of issue. I'm not saying that can't happen, but they've never had that specter on their program or anything like that. And somebody gonna say, people that know me say, Duke, you're just a Duke homer. Well, Coach K can go back to not recruiting Zion Williamson. And still win, can't he? He did. Gosh darn it. I got a picture in my phone of Cherokee Park cutting down some nets. You know what I'm saying? And Cherokee Park, though he was a pro player, he never was even close to a Zion Williamson, not in college, not in the pros. And that team, Cherokee Park, was a little bit loaded. Grant Hill played on that team. So, you know what I'm saying, Christian Laettner. But like I said, Coach K can win without the one and done as well. Mm-hmm. So. I think this might kind of go away, to be honest with you. She's looking for a settlement. I don't think it's going to be here. The company's looking for a settlement. I don't think it's going to be $100 million, though.
Yeah. It was just announced by Shams on Twitter that the NCAA and the NBA are indefinitely postponing the NBA's June 3rd early entry withdrawal date for the draft. to a new date that has not been released. So it is going to be pushing back the NBA draft, which is if they're already going to be pushing back the draft, that kind of gives me some more hope that they're going to play the season, John.
Right. This guy,
they're going to be pushing those two things back.
That's all. Yep.
By the way, here's a Michael Jordan nugget for you. Between 1990 and 1998, Michael Jordan never lost three games in a row. That's saying something.
All too competitive.
Yeah. Also, James Harden was not on the call with the other NBA superstars when the league had the conference call with him. So they don't give a shit what James Harden thinks, apparently. So, but all right, John. Next topic we're going to go to here. Let me cue up the sound. Let's see.
Yep.
It's so hard for me to sit back here in this studio looking at a guy out here hollering my name. When
last year I spent more money
on spilt liquor in bars from one side of this world to the other than you made. You're talking to the Rolex wearing, diamond ring wearing, kid stealing, woo, wheeling, dealing, limousine riding, jet flying, son of a gun, and I'm having a hard time holding these alligators down.
All right, John. That was the nature boy, the lovable, impatientable nature boy, Ric Flair. Now, before we go to Money in the Bank, John, I just want to say I watched the match the other night that was 50-some minutes long. Ended up being a damn draw because I forgot how it finished. Ended up being a draw because Flair passed out at the TV time in the Scorpion Deathlock to Sting. But old school Sting versus old school Flair on NWA title at, in the Clash of Champions, that was a damn good match. That ranks up there high on my my list of top matches.
I'm glad you got to check it out. Sting was one of those guys that the NWA had absorbed once they took over the territory that was the UWF. And anybody kind of caught the live or anybody kind of caught anybody kind of catches me and Brandon tweets back and forth. Brandon, I don't know if you ever watched the Bill Watts documentary in full yet or yet, but. There is a documentary about the UWF, about guys who came from that particular territory, whether it was Sting, Hacksaw Jim Duggan, Ron Simmons. And we all kind of, although everybody knows those guys, mm-hmm. and what their impact was. But, like, yeah, that was the first ever Clash of the Champions on TBS. I want to say it was like 1988. It was a draw where Ric Flair, the end of the match was Ric Flair passed out in the Scorpion as time expires or whatever. And then afterwards, you know what I'm saying, they elevate Sting. To like superstar status,
and those guys,
yeah, no, I mean, great,
they
great.
Flair carried. I wanted to say Flair carried the match, but there was very little time where those guys took time off in a match that you see nowadays. Getting a headlock straight to the down and take it easy for a couple of minutes. That was not that
right.
match.
Real smart, yeah. Real smart, really smart book match. They didn't do like they don't do spots like. They do now, like they did back then. So, like your finish is your finish. Like you ain't gonna do. He's not gonna do that many Scorpion Death. Like that's the finish. But that means you have to have another move. So, like the splash, the finger splash, or whatever. That that was the greatest. That's like the second best move, right? But no, man. Like I want to say that they also showed that was like NWA, WCW, whatever. That was like they served. You know, that showed on a WrestleMania Sunday to kind of pull viewership. And that was kind of like a real ballsy move for them. I can't remember what WrestleMania they kind of went against, but it was like a real ballsy move. And it kind of that kind of just showed them from hey, we not just a regional player no more because you know they wanted to really compete. So I'm glad you was able to check it out, man. A lot of people don't know the greatness of Sting because he wrestled for what people consider a lesser organization. But believe me, Sting could wrestle for Vince. For sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I just occasionally get on the network and I just find some stuff that they highlight, some big matches, so I click on it and watch them. The Undertaker, first episode was out. John, I don't know if you've seen it yet. If you need to, I'm going to give you my login so you can watch it. It is so good.
Doc, yeah.
Him talking. And I said, I copied you a little bit on some of the Facebook stuff that he was talking.
I get more and more respect for the Undertaker. the more I, like I said, as the curtains kind of peel back and he starts talking about like why he's doing it, and then you go back and look at like the matches who they kind of pitted against, whether it was Yokozuna or Mankind or Kane or the Big Show. He had some great matches. Me particularly, Brandon,
okay.
I didn't like the gimmick. American Badass gimmick. That's where I kind of got turned around. But I know people didn't necessarily like Hulk Hogan with the NWA as well. So, but I mean, man, nothing respect for the Undertaker. And I get why. And like hearing him talk about it behind the scenes, I follow him on Instagram now. Hear him talk about like why he just does this, like, and like he's in a lot of pain. His body like hurt. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But he just has a tremendous amount of drive. And he has a tremendous amount of love for his character and for the business. And that's kind of why he does it.
Yep, absolutely. Give me one second, John, to queue up something. We got all the time in the world tonight. So, John, on this day, 25 years ago, 25 years ago was the very first In Your House, okay? So you remember the In Your House pay-per-views.
Yep.
I want to see if you can give me what was, if you had to think back, if you may not, you probably won't remember, but if you had to guess, what do you feel like the main event was for that May 14th, 1995 In Your House pay-per-view?
Man, it had to be Bret Hart or something. Or
no.
Bret Hart had two
matches. He had two matches. The first match, he kicked off the show with facing Hakushi. And then Jerry Lawler came out.
Tough.
And so Jerry Lawler and Bret Hart end up fighting later on in the night. As well. So Hart had two matches. Jeff Jarrett and the Roadie took on Razor. Mabel took on Adam Bomb, some names. Savio Vega made his very first debut on that May 14th In Your House. The Smoking Guns took on Owen and Yoko. And then the main event, John, for the WWE Championship at the time was Psycho Sid versus Diesel.
Wow.
So I remember the In Your Houses, watching all those, and just I enjoyed them all. I thought it was a great concept they did. I remember when I quote unquote, knock on wood, I illegally was able to at my house get the pay per views for free on Channel 2. You could flip it there, and somehow it would come up on. Or if you didn't have the pay per view, it was in black and white, so you watched it in black and white. But I remember the time when Diesel and Shawn Michaels were the Intercontinental Champion and WWE Champion, and they beat Yoko and Bulldog for the tag titles. So they were the first time they were all champions of everything. But Owen Hart came out during the match, so Jim Cornette went there and they ended up giving the titles back the next day. But that was another great one I watched there. But no, John, I get on WWE Network. Occasionally, they got some good matches on there I'll watch. Or they got some documentaries. Really, really good. Stone Cold Steve Austin's going to be having another Broken Skull session here soon. It might be with Triple H, I believe. So that'll be interesting. But let's talk Money in the Bank real quick. I liked the way the comical and the way they did the Money in the Bank matches. I thought it was funny. It had some cheesy spots. They had some nice laughs when they're going into Titan into Vince's office, and he's like, "Get out!" And then they start leaving, and they have to push the chairs back in. I enjoyed all that. I thought it was great. I didn't really care for the rest of the pay-per-view. The title matches were okay. Braun versus Bray, you knew where that one was going because it was Bray Wyatt, not the Fiend. You knew Seth Rollins wasn't going to win. I think the most shocking news was Monday night, and I kind of predicted that Monday afternoon there was a big announcement from Becky Lynch that she announced she's pregnant. So her 400-some-day reign of champion is over. She's going to be out, obviously, for the next however many months, 9, 10, 12 months. She may not come back. Who knows? But so her and Seth are having a kid. Becky 2 belts is Becky 0 belts.
So I didn't hear you. What'd you say?
I said Becky 2 belts is now Becky no belts.
Yeah, it's kind of – yeah, man, she had a lot of – she's been like a comet, right? And we've been cheering her on. With her and I want to mispronounce Azuka. They did the little spot on Monday night.
Asuka?
I don't know. Yeah, damn. Yes, yeah. See, I didn't want to mispronounce her name. But, yeah, when they did the little spot on Monday night, Did I think a little bit of acting was involved? Yeah, but it still came off a little genuine, and it still came off as a pretty good spot. I didn't think it was cheesy. I kind of like, dude, like, again, we're in unprecedented times. I like the whole little Vince little moment, man. Again, I there's nothing they're gonna like, dude. Me and you can talk about 1995 wrestling and from 1970 to 1995 wrestling all night. But like what these folks are trying to do right now, these performers, are they trying to make their own lane? They're trying to do their own thing. Not that I wasn't about to rhyme or anything like, but like I said, they're trying to entertain, and like it would be hard for us to digest if everybody came out there and did a Roddy Piper bit, or everybody came out and did an Ultimate Warrior bit, because we've already seen that. Well, we try to, you know what I'm saying? They're trying to do the best. They're trying to do the best they can. I know there's a lot of things they're scripted for them. I get it. But I don't know what other mind. This man got a great mind, so it's hard to tell him. I don't think that's gonna work. When he made the Undertaker work, when I first seen the Undertaker, I was like, what? He's got a zombie wrestler? You know, see, that's basically what the Undertaker, and it got over. It's over. The Undertaker is one of the greatest wrestlers of all time. So again, I appreciate what I appreciate what the WWE has been able to put on. In recent months or whatnot, and like I said, I ain't necessarily all bought into it, but I can appreciate it for sure.
Yeah, they're doing what they can. You know, one of your top big performers, Roman Reigns, is out with his issue with having leukemia and not wanting to get the COVID, so he's been sitting at home, and they just had a new baby, so he's not wanting to get involved in it. They just had to strip Sami Zayn because he doesn't want to compete. So they just stripped him of the Intercontinental Championship. So that'll be announced a tournament going on this Friday night for the Intercontinental title. But, yeah, they're trying to make do the best they can. And, you know, it sucks because you don't have anybody in attendance right now. And that's I want to say 60%, John, of wrestling is the fans and 40% is the wrestling.
Right.
Does that make sense? The fans make the matches.
Right.
And that's what makes the five-star matches.
Right, right.
It's about building that believability.
Yeah, right, right. Unless you're a fan of studio wrestling, like I watch YouTube wrestling all the time, Ring of Honor and NWA Power. But like, as far as this is concerned, like the fans do play a major part of it. They also determine who might be the star. The fans get you over. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, man. But shout out to the WWE. You know, kudos to the WWE for doing their best they can.
Yeah. On tonight, WWE Network, John, I don't know if you remember this, WCW, Chi-Town Rumble 1989. Main event is for the NWA or the WCW title, Ric Flair and Ricky Steamboat.
You want the classic, like, grappler wrestling. That's it right there. Classic grappler wrestling.
Hey, I didn't know I didn't know there was an original Midnight Express versus the Midnight Express. There was two of them.
Yeah, So did you see Paulie come out there? Paulie Dangerously. He was managing one.
I see Jim Cornette holding something in the air right now.
Well, yeah. So Jim Cornette,
he's out there.
Jim Cornette. The original Midnight Express was like a guy named Dennis Condrey and beautiful Bobby Eaton. And then when Dennis, in real life, man, the wrestling is hard, dude. It puts a toll on your body. Dennis wanted to take take some time off. They brought in Stan Lane because Stan Lane was running with another tag team partner. He was in a different tag team called the Fabulous Ones with Steve Kern. If you don't remember the name Steve Kern, he is also Skinner. I know you remember Skinner. Skinner, the dude who used to fight the WWF guy who was had a crocodile. He was a crocodile.
He had chew in his mouth.
Whatever. So. Yeah.
Right.
He had
chewed in his mouth.
Right. So Jim Cornette put Stan Lane and Bobby Eaton together, and it was a masterpiece. But when Dennis Condrey wanted to come back, they found him another partner. They Paul was working for the NWA at that time. They put Paul with him. Paul was great on the mic. Before Paul became a promoter, Paul was great on the mic always, helping wrestlers get over. That's the Midnight Express. His version of the Midnight Express versus Jimmy Cornette's Midnight Express, and then they both were basically heel teams, and they both cheat to win the match, man. It's so,
did you get to watch the Chris Benoit story on Behind the Mat?
It's hard watching anything Chris Benoit. I'll be honest with you.
Well, I don't want you. I don't want to talk about him. I just did you watch any of the show or you know the series, right?
Yeah.
So, this past week's episode was about the Road Warriors. So about obviously Hawk died from, but it talks about the Road Warriors and all the stories with them. And then next week is the season finale. Next week's is about Owen Hart. So I think that's going to be another good one, John. I'll send you a couple links. Those are all on YouTube as well.
Okay.
But yeah, the Road Warriors and Hawk dying the way he did, and then the Owen Hart one, which can do huge ratings. So it should be good. But yeah, a lot of good documentaries, John. A lot of good shows. Nothing else going on. Watching on WWE, which is at least it's something. Who I can't wait to see, John, is if they need to move up. Sorry, that's Tucker, my dog, that's making that guest appearance with us right now. But it's all good. Adam Cole, I'm ready for the reincarnated Shawn Michaels, Adam Cole, to move up. I think they want to try to save him to come up before they get fans back. I want to save that. By the way, man, what's your thoughts on Otis?
What you mean? The guy that won?
Yeah. He won the Money in the Bank.
They see something in him that, I kind of see it,
he's
too.
He's funny.
Right. I kind of see it, too. So remember, folks, this might not necessarily be his first, incarnation. This might not be his first gimmick. I think about how many gimmicks Bray Wyatt went through or has went through.
Mm-hmm.
If anybody looks at his dad, who also used to professional wrestling, he had a bunch of gimmicks. Irwin R. Scheister. With his dad, he had a bunch of gimmicks that he went through to become great. A lot of time, guys, just because again, I could another example. Shawn Michaels. Shawn Michaels was running with the Rockers, and then he became the Heartbreak Kid, and then transformed to DX. So they kind of see something in him potentially. He is funny. So you got that, and WWE is part of anybody's gimmick. Is not necessarily being the best wrestler, and that's why things drive Bret Hart so crazy, because he's probably the best wrestler, period. But you have to be entertaining,
right?
You have to be engaging, and I think they see something in this guy.
Yeah, absolutely. So, all right, John, let's do some quick cleanup tomorrow night.
Yep.
Facebook live show tomorrow night we may go 45 minutes to an hour. I know we've just talked the last almost hour and a half on here going over everything. So we'll cover any kind of news. If there's anything that develops overnight, it's a tomorrow. But I think tomorrow is also more of an interactive show with fans of Crossroads who want to say their comments, give us some topics to talk about. We want you guys, and we'll put on our Facebook pages tonight and everything, but we want you guys to come and ask us questions. Ask us our thoughts, and we'll talk about your guys' comments for 45 minutes, because we're going to be hitting everything else already with tonight's radio show. But the Facebook show tomorrow, we want to interact with people that are commenting, things like that. So sort of you guys are going to determine the format of the show for tomorrow night. Me and John are just going to come in. You're going to give us some topics. We're going to be talking. We're going to be shooting the bull like we're sitting at a bar stool, and kind of go from there. So I'm kind of looking forward to that tomorrow. I'm thinking about 7:00, John. Does that sound about right for you?
Dude, let me check my quarantine schedule. It's open.
I figured it'd be open. Yeah, I got some things going on tomorrow early evening, but we'll go from 7 to 7:45 or 7 to 8 tomorrow on Facebook Live, and we'll answer questions and we'll debate what we need to. You guys want to talk more about the Jordan documentary? We'll talk that. If you want to talk about Jordan Air over here, Jonathan Birdsong, we'll talk about that as well. But we'll put that up on our Facebook page this evening, on our personal pages, as well as our Crossroads page for tomorrow night.
Yep.
And we'll have fun with that. So, John, I'll let you kind of finish this off, close us out for this evening.
Man, I know it's tough out there, folks, man. Just get closer to your family. Get closer to God. That's what I've been doing. There's a lot of things, you know, saying on YouTube that you can, that you, that can, you know, old movies free, but on YouTube, TV, and heck, everybody got a Netflix subscription. I feel like in America, man, there's a lot of things, you know what I'm saying, you can that can preoccupy your time, and just use, and just use this time, to, you know what I'm saying, not to go crazy, just use your time, you know, just to, you know, find, I mean, not to be a whole kumbaya moment, but to find peace within yourself, honestly. That's what I do. Listen to music, cookies. I don't know, dude. That's what I do around the house. You know, yard work, whatever, man. Other than that, I probably just watch a couple. I mean, like I said, this is my own advice tonight. Watch. I think me and the kid gonna watch Losing Isaiah tonight. Another classic. We watched. Like I said, we watched Philadelphia yesterday with Tom Hanks and Denzel Washington, man, and we were both crying by the end of it. So, but no, man, I just want to thank everybody for jumping on and for listening tonight. I know sometimes, Brandon, I think the folks at Crossroads are a little shy and they don't want to call.
I'm gonna send out
a bat signal to my main man on the East Coast, Sweet Lou, because I know he has called the last couple times we've had guests on and they're not gonna be able to get through. And unfortunately, you know, guests take precedence over over callers sometimes. So I do apologize, Sweet Lou, if he is listening. Hopefully, I'm saying he'll call. You know, saying like I said, I'm gonna send a back thing around to try to find him, see what's going on with him. But like, man, I appreciate everybody listening. I appreciate everybody watching. And like I said, while we're doing this on these precedented times, man, everybody stay safe. And like I said, keep on listening.
Absolutely. Thank you, guys. We'll see you guys tomorrow. And also, happy belated birthday to our number one Crossroads fan, Kelly Birdsong. Hill, congratulations.
Oh,
happy
yeah.
Birthday.
Yeah, I'd be receiving it.
Crossroads Sports.